there, according to Forest Service data, was that the loss of spawning and steelhead habitat was in the vicinity of 50%. So the Mapleton District is a little worse overall than the forest. And that's one of the reasons I think those organizations chose to litigate there. But there's other districts on the Sisal National Forest that are not affected by any injunction or court action, where, again, I said 43% reduction. And that's a continuing trend. I can't give you a figure, but we could just expect, under these current plans, which the agency is unwilling to amend, continued increase in that destruction rate.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Platt.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Platt. I'm policy assistant for Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. I've been asked to deliver testimony on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, as well as the Warm Springs Tribe. I was asked by the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation Board of Trustees Chairman Elwood Padua to deliver this testimony, as well as, I should also mention that the testimony was reviewed by the Fish and Wildlife Committee of the Umatilla Tribe and developed by their natural resources staff. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation are grateful for the opportunity to address the proposed state-federal lands policy contained in HJR 41. The tribe is especially concerned with this policy because of the effect it may have on the lands that they ceded to the United States in 1855, the Treaty of 1855, and on which they reserved rights to take fish, as well as to hunt, gather roots and berries, and pasture stock. These ceded lands stretch from the Snake River in Washington to the Strawberry Range on the south, and from the John Day River in the east, or in the John Day River in the west, to the Hell's Canyon in the east. Currently, the Umatilla Tribe is involved in both the National Forest Management Act and the Federal Land Planning and Management Act process as a means to impose conservation standards upon federal land managers in order to implement the rights that they reserved in their treaties. HJR 41 would, in the Umatilla Tribe's view, restrict the ability of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to speak for the state on fish and wildlife matters. Within the next few months, the Columbia River Tribes in the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho will embark on a sub-basin planning process aimed at planning for salmon and steelhead production in the upper Columbia River tributaries. Protection of habitat on federal lands is a key ingredient for the success of this process, and it is intended that the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management fully participate in the sub-basin planning process. The tribe is therefore concerned that the Fish and Wildlife Commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife will be consigned a minor role in sub-basin planning if they are not delegated the power to speak for the state on fish and wildlife protection on federal lands. Indeed, it is essential that the department stand on an equal footing with the tribes and the other states if sub-basin planning is to succeed. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation are also concerned that HJR 41 will discourage the completion of plans under the NFMA and under FLIPMA. Both the NFMA and the FLIPMA provide a congressionally developed set of conservation standards for the use of national forests and on BLM lands. Application of these standards is essential if we are to maintain the forests, fish and wildlife, and clean water productivity. The tribe views the request for statewide cumulative impact statements as a means of delaying implementation of plans that would apply these standards. This might be acceptable if other conservation standards were substituted in their place, but Section 4 of the resolution would, quote, urge that no constraints be applied in the interim to existing plans. Such a policy could result in the immediate loss of productive fish and wildlife habitat on the tribe's ceded lands. The Umatilla Tribe is participating in good faith in the NFMA process and FLIPMA, and the tribe would view this proposed state policy as a severe setback for the Umatilla efforts if it were implemented. HJR 41 appears to be a misguided policy that is not in the long-term interest of either the Umatilla Tribe by the other citizens of Oregon. The tribe therefore urges this committee to either table the bill or amend it to remove the above-mentioned objectionable sections. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Platt?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
I just want to thank John for coming in. I want to thank the tribes for taking an interest and for sharing their comments with us as a legislature. We started those contacts during the interim, and I want to thank you, and I hope you would send the message back.
I certainly will, Senator.
Glad they're willing to.
Senator, if I could, Mr. Chairman, if I could also mention, the Warm Springs Tribe, I spoke this morning with Gene Green, who's their Director of Natural Resources, as well as with their attorney, Harry Arnett. While they were in general agreement with this statement, they did not have an opportunity to discuss a position with their Fish and Wildlife Committee and with their tribal council. They would like to have the opportunity to do so and to present comments for the record as soon as possible within the next week. They would hope to have people back from Washington. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Is that the panel?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions for any of the members of the panel? Thank you for coming before us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gail Achterman.
Senator Bradbury and members of the committee, I would like to take the opportunity today to respond to some of the concerns that the various environmental organizations have expressed about House Joint Resolution Number 41. As most of you are aware, the joint resolution is a part of the governor's 60-day legislative agenda, and frankly, in drafting and developing the joint resolution, I am the primary author of the language, and I made every effort in the drafting, contrary to the urgings of some legislators, in fact, to have this resolution be as neutral as possible, to not prejudge the outcome of the plans and to not take the kind of action that Governor Attia took when he set up his original forest planning coordination process, which expired, his executive order expired on December 31st, 1986. He announced before even seeing the draft plans that there should be no reduction in the allowable cut, which in Governor Goldschmidt's view was not a particularly constructive approach towards effective involvement in the federal process. We tried to draft a neutral resolution, and it's obvious that some of the language that I thought was neutral has raised concerns with some organizations. The first point that many witnesses this afternoon has made is to ask, is to comment that maybe the resolution is completely unnecessary. I suppose we could follow the approach that the governor would not have asked the legislature to do anything on this subject and simply have issued an executive order and worked out the memorandum of understanding that he thinks are necessary with the federal government, and we could have done that without involving the legislature. Frankly, we felt that this was a significant enough issue and important enough for the future of the state, no matter what your predisposition or leanings are on the substantive issues, that it's imperative that the state be involved and that it's imperative that we enter into our participation in this process with the full backing of the elected representatives of the people of the state, as well as the governor simply acting on his executive authority. The best way that we could see to do that was through a joint resolution of the legislature, and we feel that such a joint resolution will help us in working with our congressional delegation and, most importantly, working with the federal agencies that are involved in impressing upon them the importance that the citizens of Oregon place on this process. So that's why we think legislative action is necessary, and that's why we suggested a joint resolution to the legislature. I think that it's also important to note that when I was drafting this in conjunction with some of the legislators, I emphasized time and again that we needed to not make judgments on the substantive merits of the forest plans one way or the other, but instead have the legislature and the governor setting off on setting up a process for participating in the federal planning effort without any prejudging of the substance. And that's also what we are trying to do, and I think that the effort of this resolution is to be process-oriented. I'd also like to note that, contrary to what the apparent fears of the environmental organizations are, Governor Goldschmidt has absolutely no desire to delay the planning process. He just wants to make sure that the state of Oregon is a part of that process as it goes forward. And there was no intent on our part to suggest in paragraph 4 or any other paragraph of this resolution that we should speed up, slow down, or do anything else as far as the timing of the federal planning process is concerned. In fact, one of his principal concerns is that the industry of this state, whether whatever industry you're talking about, recreation industry, timber industry, anyone else, needs some certainty and some stability so that we can plan on making investments for the future, whether what you want to do is invest in a resort or what you want to do is invest in a guide service or what you want to do is invest in a timber mill. I couldn't agree more with the comments you've heard this afternoon that with over a decade of complete uncertainty on the national forest planning process, it's been very, very difficult on Oregonians, whatever their perspectives. I think that we would, I'd also just briefly like to run through the purposes of the various provisions in the resolutions that are before you. Frankly, I don't have any objection to the suggestion that Liz Frankel made that the governor of the state of Oregon, representing the people of Oregon, is directed to participate actively. That's what I thought that language meant and what I thought the governor was supposed to do. I think that the reason that the language on line 22 is consistent rather than simply going with the word coordinate is that is twofold. First, there's a subtle difference in the federal planning statutes for the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. The National Forest Management Act talks in terms of requiring the Forest Service to coordinate their plans with state and local plans. The Federal Land Policy and Management Act language is to make their plans consistent with state and local plans to the maximum extent possible consistent with federal objectives. So there's a slight difference in the language in the two federal statutes. And frankly, what we were seeking to do well beyond the language of the federal statutes themselves is that we here in Oregon have had a very elaborate statewide planning process that local governments have participated in extensively, state agencies participate in. We have statewide goals and guidelines. We have state wildlife plans, state park and recreation plans, and a state timber plan. All those state plans are not necessarily consistent, but the state and local plans do exist, and we think that in terms of stating where we're coming from to the federal government, we can't require them to be consistent with the state and local plans, but we certainly think that's what the governor ought to be advocating, and how the governor and the people of this state choose through this process to balance what inconsistencies may exist in the state plans is something that we think will be worked out in the process. But I do believe that consistent is the right direction to go in terms of the directive that the legislature should be giving the governor and, more important, giving the federal agencies in terms of where we hope to get through this process. I think that some of the concern this afternoon, or a great deal of it, has focused on the fourth paragraph of the resolution. And if there are some possible, perhaps we could clarify the language. Frankly, I must agree with some of the comments that Senator Bradbury was making earlier in terms of the fact that we're talking about not making changes in existing plans in contemplation of the new plans, not that there aren't the kinds of routine modification and amendments that some of the witnesses here this afternoon have talked about that I think are not contrary to the language of this paragraph 4. I think that the governor's principal concern on this issue is frankly, that he doesn't want the train to go out of the station before the state even has a chance to get on board. And I frankly have a somewhat difficult time understanding some of the concerns about leading to endless delay or some of the other concerns that have been voiced by witnesses this afternoon. So that if the committee is interested or it would like any assistance from us on looking at potential language changes in paragraph 4, we could consider some. I really think that the purpose is quite straightforward and is reflected in some of Senator Bradbury's comments earlier today. and Nolan Hannis, our state economist, who has worked extensively in Governor Attia's coordination process, is here with me this afternoon, primarily because she was interested in hearing your concerns. But in addition, I asked her to join me in part if you had any technical questions about some of the facts and figures that were being bandied about previously. I think Ann has reviewed every one of the plans that the Forest Service has released so far and is frankly someone I rely on a great deal for unbiased, straightforward information on what the proposals really are. So she's here mainly to respond to any specific questions you may have, and I'm here, I guess, to respond to any questions or concerns you may have about the language of the resolution that I haven't covered already.
Questions for Ms. Acterman? I had a couple questions. These are just little things, but like on line 11, on page 1, commodities critical to the economy of the state, including timber, grazing, the proposal was to add tourism, fish.
We'd have no problem with that.
I would assume
change. We'd
have no problem with that. Okay.
I did want to, perhaps I should address one other proposed change. I think the reason that we didn't address the National Park Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service, who are federal landowners, as is the Department of Defense, and the Department of Defense never shares their plans for land use with anyone, but Fish and Wildlife and National Park Service do have planning programs that go on. But they have specific single-purpose federal authorizations for what they're supposed to be doing in their particular planning process. And they don't, there isn't the same set of competing interests that there is on multiple-use lands, which the BLM-administered lands and the Forest Service lands represent. And so the reason we didn't include the Park Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service is that, quite frankly, the agencies that are involved in the interagency coordination process for Forest Service and BLM lands, there just isn't the same problem on Park Service and Fish and Wildlife and refuges.
I have a question. There was a concern raised in subsection 3 when it relates to avoiding incremental decision-making and a request to defer final decisions on all national forests mm-hmm. and management districts until the statewide cumulative impact of the proposed plans can be evaluated and considered. How soon do you think we'll be in the position where these plans could start, that we'll be done with all the plans?
Well, I think that on the Bureau of Land Management plans for Western Oregon, which are the key ones that we're concerned about, those plans are designed by the Bureau of Land Management right now to be issued and the final versions to be approved so that this cumulative impact analysis can be done. They set up their release process and their entire schedule is based on this premise. And so that their planning process, which I believe will result in the issuance of all their final plans in 1990, and they haven't even started, they're just beginning the issue identification process on their 1990 decadal plans, they're already planning to issue them in this way so that the state request will have no change on their proposed schedule. The Forest Service has advised me, the regional forester has advised me, that he had already made the commitment to do this with Governor Goldschmidt in a letter, and that the comment had been made to them consistently enough that they had to look at the economic impacts from whatever perspective you look at them are not confined to individual national forest boundaries, so that residents of Eugene are just as affected by, if you will, the decisions on the Umpqua Forest Plan as they are on Willamette National Forest Plan. And because of the concerns that a broad number of citizens have expressed about this particular issue, it was our understanding, although we want to get a written agreement with the Forest Service, that they were all also already going to do this. So we don't think that because of this request we're going to provoke any additional delay. And I think I'd like Ann to address briefly why she has strongly recommended to Governor Goldschmidt that this type of language be included, and she's much better qualified to address it than I.
Currently, we do have only about 4 of the plans out, 3 of which the state has issued a opinion on or recommendation under Governor Attia. Many of those plans right now, we don't know what the effect would be. For example, as Gail was mentioning with Eugene, if the plan on the Umpqua comes out and you don't know what's going to happen on the Willamette, it very much affects, colors your decisions overall and what you might ultimately recommend. And a cumulative analysis is critical to that so that we know where we're actually ending up by the time all
the plans are issued. But what you're saying, as I understand it, is that it's the current BLM policy to develop a cumulative impact statement before any plans are in place, and that it's your understanding that it is a Forest Service policy to do the same?
I have been assured of that by both the regional forester and their director, regional director of planning. However, I still felt it was important to say this, since the only place the Forest Service has ever said it in is in a letter that no one's ever been able to find for me. And while they say it again, I'd like it in a little more concrete form.
Okay, then. So as far as you're concerned, what's contained in paragraph 3 is simply reflects, in terms of incremental decision-making, simply reflects what you understand to be current federal policy.
It does. We just want to make sure that they don't change their minds.
Well, yeah, but that's the way we're headed right now. If we don't say anything as far as it looks.
It's our understanding that that's correct.
Okay, let's turn to paragraph 4, which I think is the one of greatest concern. You heard the testimony of some of the panel that preceded you about existing land use plans being ancient and outdated. I mean, they were adopted a long time ago. I don't mean to, you know. And that they don't provide the protections that are currently mandated that and as standards under the National Forest Planning Act or whatever it was. Your comments on that testimony and on, I mean, more specifically on the issue that that testimony raises.
I think that John Platt made an interesting point in his analogy to the statewide planning goals and guidelines and contending that the National Forest Management Act requires certain standards to be established that are like our statewide goals and guidelines that need to be followed on the forest individually. I think that the one thing that is of great concern to the governor that didn't happen in the adoption of the Forest Service standards, if you will, particularly minimum management requirements for wildlife, is that there was little or no public participation in the development of those minimum management requirements. Our own Department of Fish and Wildlife, it's my understanding, has a number of questions about what those minimum management requirements are, and I think that lack of opportunity for public participation in the development of those standards is a very stark contrast to what Oregon did in the development of statewide goals and guidelines, where there was a great deal of public participation in the development of the statewide goals and guidelines. Governor Goldschmidt's problem with the minimum management requirements, as one example, is that there was not that same opportunity for public participation as those were developed. So I think that is one point. And I think that's the problem we've got, is that what we hear from citizens around the state, whether they are representing environmental organizations on the one hand or industry on the other, depending upon what particular case arises, and it varies case by case, is that that decisions are being made on the federal lands that dramatically impact local communities in a variety of ways without any opportunity for state participation. And I go back to my original point. The whole point of this paragraph is to make sure that the state has the opportunity to participate in the process before decisions that dramatically affect all of its citizens are made.
Further questions?
I might make one comment. I mean, I'm frankly completely satisfied with the language that's in paragraph 4 right now, and I don't have any problem with it. If you really want to know, and I promised I was going to go in here and not suggest any amendments, but after listening to the testimony and really having tried very hard to write a neutral document that apparently isn't neutral in some people's views, I think you could respond to the concerns of the witnesses that you heard earlier if you inserted, and I just wrote this, and so whether it's brilliant English, I think the sentences work.
Okay.
On line 3, if you insert it after the words "the new plans," the words "or amendments to existing plans," so that the sentence would read, "The government of the state of Oregon is directed to urge the United States Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management to continue managing federal lands under existing land use plans until the new plans or amendments to existing plans are developed and approved with participation by this state." And then you start the next phrase, I know there's a grammatical word for this, but phrase, "to urge that no constraint should be applied in the interim to existing plans in contemplation of the new plans," and then insert, "without an opportunity for the state of Oregon to review any such," I think it's proposals would be the right word, and then simply say, "and to urge that the new plans should consider the full range of possible management alternatives in order to make participation in the process by this state meaningful," you would take care of, I think, the bulk of the concerns about the fact that there are amendments maybe going on to the existing plans, or that there are constraints that maybe should be applied. The governor's concern is that those constraints shouldn't be applied and amendments shouldn't be adopted without the opportunity for participation by the state. And so I think that with those insertions of those two phrases, we could take care of the concerns that have been expressed to you this afternoon and still get at the point that the governor and I are most concerned about, which is we want to make sure that the state participates in the process.
Yeah, okay. So let me make sure, I'm going to just read back to you what you just read. The government of the state of Oregon is directed to urge the United States Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management to continue managing federal lands under existing land use plans until the new plans or amendments to existing plans are developed and approved with participation by the state. Period?
No, then you could just continue the comment, I guess. I mean, it makes a real long sentence, but it's probably all right.
Nothing resolutions. To urge that no constraints be applied in the interim to existing plans in contemplation of the new plans without opportunity.
I said without an opportunity.
Okay. Without an opportunity to review such proposals.
For the state.
Oh, okay. I didn't write that one down. Without an opportunity for the state.
Yeah, to review any such proposals.
Without the opportunity for the state to review any such proposals. And then
I think the last clause can stay the same.
And to urge that new plans should consider the full range of possible management plans.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Cullen.
I don't know anything about forced, about, well, the only thing I about know is secondhand and what we've heard in the Trade Committee and what I see. And I just, the concern I have is that we don't even mention sustained yield at all in any discussion here, and I guess
I think that's because it was intended to be completely process-oriented, and we don't mention fish either.
Well, you talk about management alternatives, and there are some, I guess that's my concern about the whole thing.
Senator Cohen, not all of the plans issued so far by the Forest Service have been on sustained yield. In fact, one of the plans, the Ochoco, was recommended by the Forest Service as having a rather substantial departure harvest that in my recommendation to Governor Attia, I said that it was so radical that it would harm the economy. So not all of the plans issued right now are on sustained yield, and one of the things that the state wants to look at is to see if that sustained yield is something that we really, that are in those plans and something we have to adhere to.
I think that, Senator Cohen, that's a good point. I think that to have this be process-oriented and not to get to the substantive issues, because one of the concerns that we have to consider in each one of these plans, and sometimes down to a ranger district basis, is the timber industry is recommending in a number of instances that there be departures from sustained yield. If we had a full-blown hearing on the merits of sustained yield or departures from sustained yield on a forest-by-forest or BLM district-by-district basis, you might come out and the governor might come out with different judgments depending upon what the particular timber supply situation in that given instance is. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and that's the reason that I tried not to use that.
I guess the other piece I have, there are reasons why we would want to cut more than can ever grow back.
Well, Ann can probably explain to you in better than I why in some particular instances you might want to get into departures. And
there are several reasons, and some of them are put forth in federal law about why a departure cut would be wanted or desirable. For example, if you would have bugs go through an area and kill off a lot of trees. For example, in the Deschutes National Forest, the lodgepole pine has been devastated by pests there, and so in that case you might want to have a departure harvest to remove some of that timber so that you limit the damage. One reason why...
Well, that means you better get in there and do an extra effort to replant. And I
yes.
guess so my all-around concern is, you know, you better have the departure plan call for the investment that it takes to replant so
oh,
you
right.
can still
that's
maintain
assumed,
a sustained
yes.
yield. And I guess that's my
but if
concern,
you,
and that's why I don't see anything wrong in mentioning explicitly what we're after here.
Well, Senator Cohen, I think the problem is that there are a lot of these words that have developed in the forest planning process that have a lot of different meanings to different people, and there would be people...